welcome, one and all, to a cock abridged. A cock abridged. We call it that. There's a good reason why we call it that. Great reason. Best reason. A Clash of Kings. That's it. We're reading a book called The Clash of Kings. It's about these kings who clash, and there's wolves and cripples and incest and dragons, and it's the fucking best. I recommend it. It's called Game of Thrones. Welcome all to another episode. Today is episode 5. Episode V. For you Romans. It's Bran 1. This is the first chapter of Brandon Stark in A Clash of Kings. And I want to warn you that this episode we're taking very seriously. We're going straight down the line. This is an academic exercise. This is analysis of a text. And we have no room for any kind of levity here. No joshing, no japing, no tomfoolery. We are getting straight to the point here at Old Swiftex. And we begin with a crippled boy musing. He's drawing a distinction. He's drawing a dichotomy. He's a dichotomy draftsman, drawing a big old. It's on the one hand, you've got the hard stone of the window seat, and on the other hand, you got the comforts of the feather bed. And Bran is thinking like, okay, well, the feather bed, it may be warm, it may be comfortable, but it doesn't let me see out the window. That hard stone window might be uncomfortable, but it lets me see out into the wide real world, which he cannot see from the prison of his bed. Bran feels imprisoned in his situation because of his crippling. Bran, for those of you who remember, might recall Bran having a tumble last season. Not the good kind of tumble. The kind of tumble that paralyzes your spine and turns your legs into flaccid little hot dogs that can't propel you, locomote you in any kind of fashion, which is the worst kinds of leg. Sorry you can't join us, Tilly. Come to the next one. Welcome, Amarub, Brandon, Hadass, Advar, Kelly, Reg. Welcome all to the show. Is it a show? I think it's more of a happening. It's more of an occurrence. It's more of an irregular, spontaneous. It's like how it's like an eclipse. You know, it's like one of those things that just sort of astronomically, it's just sort of required that the heavens sort of line up in such a way that, you know, the sky just goes a little yellow sometimes. And it's like, well, you know, that happened. You know, some of the more sort of astrally inclined might sort of look up and go, hey, that's an improvement. Citrusy. I like my heavens citrus tinted. And others will go, eh, is it necessary? And you know, some people think that it'll happen at a certain time. Some try to predict when the citrus lightning strikes. Which is difficult to do because, you know, astronomy, like all things, is governed by physical laws. You know, rocks spin and dance by the decree of certain, you know, hairy little mathematics that live in the little fringes of the molecules. But some things move more chaotically than others nonetheless. You got like these comets in these strange hemispherical pseudo-elliptical orbits that are coming interstellar from some strange unknown galaxy, and it's harder to predict the movement of such bodies, and it's for that reason that we are streaming on this balmy morning in Dublin. Afternoon, actually. It's afternoon here in Dublin, and the weather here in Dublin, where we're recording live, is 12 degrees centigrade, with a humidity of 66 degrees and a 35 kilometer per hour wind. The precipitation, of course, is 87%. So that's your weather report. We always start UltraFX with a weather report. Well, maybe we should do a traffic update. We need more segments in UltraFX because we want to give it more structure. So Brandon Stark is really upset about being crippled, which, you know, you would. We've all had that. Well, no, I mean, it's not even funny to riff off that, is it? Because, you know, that's something that actually happens. I mean, it, you know, it's all well and good to make fun of, like, you know, when dragons are eating snarks and grumplings. But every now and then you sort of forget that, hang on, fantasy books, they're not all fantasy. The good ones are actually mostly about stuff that happens to people, and you gotta sort of, you know... But he's a cripple, and he's a bit upset about that, and he's feeling trapped in Winterfell. He's feeling trapped in his body, which is probably the most horrifying relationship you can possibly have with your body. You want to be friends with your body. You can't always be Biffles. I think it's bad to be Biffles with your body, actually. Because it's like a teacher-student relationship, or even like those people who are like, oh yeah, you know, my mum's my best mate. You know, she's not like a mum. Even when the mum says, my daughter's my best friend, you know, which is not, this is unlisted. Oh yeah. Okay. Right. That explains why there's no one here. All right. All right, we're public now. If someone can confirm that we're streaming publicly, that'd be swell. I was wondering, like, you know, I've got nothing wrong with an intimate gathering. Nine people's great. Nine people is, I mean, three is a party, four is a crowd, nine is an intimate UltraFX gathering. But I did mean for that to be public, so please confirm that we're public now. But as I was saying, I think you got to be an authority over your body as opposed to a friend with your body. Because just like those mothers who are like, oh, I'm the best mate with me daughter Sally, it can be too permissive, right? The kid can run all over the parent sometimes and take advantage of the friendliness, right? When to a certain extent one should obey one's parent. I don't mean to be old-fashioned, but when I've been raising my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandnephews, I've always felt that there does need to be some sense of authority, because there is difference. There is difference in experience. There is difference in knowledge. And it's not about, like, I'm better than you. It's about, like, hey, mate, I've been round the block. I know more about, like, you know, what's best avoided and what's not. And I'll tell you that you should stop sticking bubble gum in your fucking bunghole. So respect my authority. And I think that's how we need to treat our bodies. If we try to be friends to our bodies, and our bodies are like, I want Twinkies. Is that what they're called? What are they like? They're like deep fried mayonnaise buns or something. What do they eat in what are they in America? Twinkies? Or is that a homosexual LGBT term? I can't remember which one. Oh, there's a euphemism there, isn't there? Do people say Twinkie to mean, oh, because it's full of, oh boy. Okay, look, we're learning things. Someone confirm in the chat, but not too graphically. But what we're trying to say is that Bran, he's having a tough time with his body. And he's feeling a bit down on the whole sort of paralysis issue, and he's wanting to feel free. But one of the expressions, one of the modes, one of the ways that Bran says his feelings, we all have different ways of expressing our feelings, right? Like some people do abstract art. Some people get all, oh, Hadass, you'll know, who was the splattery... Jackson Pollock? Jackson Pollock. Like, some people go out and buy a bucket of burgundy and splatter it on a canvas, and that's how they express their feelings. And some people dye their hair black and listen to a whole bunch of mindless self-indulgence. And some people, lots of things. But where was I going with this one? Look, the point is that Bran expresses himself through the medium, the unplumbed medium of wolf behavior. Bran expresses his feelings through his wolves because he's got this psychic connection, which has recently been awoken by his fall. The wolf blood, old Nan calls it, the wolf blood, it is stronger in some than in others, and we know that this blood in Bran runs deep and strong. And Bran feels that all the direwolves are howling in Winterfell at the moment, Summer and Shaggy Dog, and they are distressed by recent events. They are distressed because their bondmates, their humans, Rickon and Bran, are distressed by the disappearance of Ned, Catelyn, Rob. Everyone's on edge, and the direwolves reflect that, so they're all howling. And Bran feels like the howling is a language that he could almost understand. The howls are almost like words, like to him. There probably wasn't a notification put out because we started unlisted instead of public, so that's a shame. But whatever. This is like a secret, low key, secret episode. You know when when rock bands like the Foo Fighters go and they do a show in like some like Polish weather station, and they headline as just like where the cheesemongers instead of the Foo Fighters, and so only like three people go, and then you're like, psych, it was the Foo Fighters, and there's like one guy at the back of the audience who was like, fuck this, I paid to see the cheesemongers, mate, I accept no substitute, I'm a cheeseman through and through, I'm not putting up with this Foo Fighter shit, and he marches out. That happened to me once. I was playing with my band, we did a secret show, he wanted the cheesemongers, it was a disaster. Sotiris is a little bit confused. That's all right. We all are. Welcome. Join the club. So the wolves are howling and they miss their brothers and sisters. And now it's time to turn to page two. We ripped the page. Okay. Don't turn the pages too vigorously or you'll get, there's a lesson there. And so, the disappearance of Jon as well, and Arya and Sansa, all these Starks have left Winterfell, and so the Starks and their wolves are distressed and howling. And so Bran asks Roderick Cassel, why are all these wolves howling? And Roderick Cassel, he does a little bit of canine psychology. Is it still canine if it's a wolf? Or is it lupine? Is it lupine for wolves? Hold on, is it? I mean, I'm pretty sure it's lupine for wolves. Yeah, that's sick. It's lupine because Luna, right? And Luna is the moon, and wolves are fans of the moon, allegedly. And that's why they're called lupine. Lupine. So Roderick Cassel does a little bit of lupine psychology, and he asks, who can know the mind of a wolf? Meaning like, oh, you know, it's rhetorical. No one can know the mind of a wolf, but Bran could, couldn't he? Because that's the whole jam of Bran's psychic power, is that he can psychically connect with these wolves and know what they're feeling. So it's a sneaky little hint from Germo, from the Germworm. Do people call him the Germworm? That Bran has a connection to the wolves. Farlan, the kennel master, who is not a fan of the direwolves, since the normal doggos are not fans of the direwolves, says that they want freedom. The direwolves belong in the wild, not in a castle, which no doubt is true of the direwolves, but it is also importantly true of Bran, because Bran is feeling now as though he would rather be out in the wild than caged in this castle. Hadar says that Lupus lupine is a flower. Is it a moon flower? Does it grow on the moon? Is this a lunar flower? Wouldn't it be great if there was just like a bowl of petunias on Mars, like Curiosity just took a photo and it was like, oh, someone's done a flower arrangement. That'd be something to tell the grandkids about. And so the wolves belong in the wild, not in a castle. And Gage, so Bran is going from like person to person asking them about the wolves. And when Bran asks Gage, Gage says, oh, the wolves want to hunt. Because a wolf smells better than any man, and the wolves can smell prey out beyond. There's something to get out there that the wolves and Bran don't want. Anything we say anything about wolves in this chapter, you know that it's also talking about the Starks, Bran and Rickon. And we also have Farlan, we also have Gage toss cubes of suet in a kettle of stew, which is some mad rhymes from MC Gurmo. And Neil Cheeseburger is confused by this channel. You know what, Neil's Cheeseburger? You confuse me too, right? Are you a Neil? Are you a Cheeseburger? What's going on? What kind of dairy get-up is going on here? Mate? Neil? Explain yourself. Are you like Neil from The Young Ones, maybe? Is he the one with the long hair? Look, I don't get it, Neil. I don't get you. Explain yourself, mate. Look. All right, I forgive you. I'm sorry. I was a bit hard on you, Neil. Neil, sorry. Neil, it's going to be all right. I think we'll get through this together. Just take it easy on the cheese. I'm lactose intolerant. So, there's this bloke called Bran, and he asks Maester Luwin what's going on with the wolves. And Luwin reckons, hey, I reckon the wolves are howling at the comet, because of course there is this great fiery prophetic comet scorched across the sky, like some kind of a red sharpie tossed right up at the skybox, just sort of grazed the skybox and just sort of split it open with crimson, pouring all the little god pixels bleeding out from the edges of the texture. That's what's happened with that prophetic red comet, and Maester Luwin's like, see how bright the comet is? Maybe the wolves think that the comet is the moon, which is interesting actually, because there's a whole thing. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the work of a man called Lucifer Means Lightbringer. I mean, that's not actually his name, I assume. I'm sure his mother doesn't call him Lucifer Means Lightbringer. Maybe he does. Whatever. But there's someone called Lucifer Means Lightbringer on the interwebs who talks about the mythical astrological meanings hidden within A Song of Ice and Fire. And there's a lot of very sort of like speculative thoughts that go behind this analysis. But some of the ideas that he has is that there's this imagery mentioned in one of the books in the first one about a second moon existing in the sky once, apparently, mythically, in Game of Thrones. And the moon cracked open and dragons poured out of it, and that's where dragons come from. And the reason why the moon cracked open is because it was scorched by the sun, and the sun scorched the moon open, and like some kind of cosmic over, it spewed forth lizards upon the earth. And there's all these sort of weird little references that Lucifer Means Lightbringer sort of stitches together to form some sort of semi-coherent mythical, psychological, psycho-astro-mega concept of like what it all means. But my point is that I'm sure Lucifer Means Lightbringer would find some special meaning in this idea that the comet is the moon, because the comet represents fire and dragons, fire and blood, as Osha says soon, and that is connected to the moon in some of this astronomical mythology. Anyway, then Osha gets talked to by Bran, that's grammar, and Osha says, your wolves have more wit than your maester. They know truths that the grey man has forgotten. And this is, of course, something that, like, comes up a lot. This idea of, ooh, there are these know-it-alls, these fucking Horatios who don't know what's what in heaven and earth, right? There's the institution and there's the established wisdom, which is always wrong and doesn't include the full supernatural depths of the world. Koropu, we're going to go on another Schwift outburst. Koropu, I disagree strongly. Koropu just said that the moon egg thing was one of the worst Doctor Who episodes. That was one of the best Doctor Who episodes, like top five of the new series. That was the one in the library. That was the one with the mother... Vashta Narada, mate. Vashta Narada. That was the one where there's this library planet, a whole planet dedicated to books, and there was this consciousness. It was a sentient, conscious mega-library infested with darkness parasites from the Amazonian jungle planet, and then there's these spacemen walking around with spooky skeleton suits because they got eaten by the Vashna Narada, and then the Doctor's like, we gotta save everyone, and then, like, Donna Noble is a plinth. It was a confusing episode, but I think it's one of the best, because you get to say Vashna Narada. But Osh's conclusion is that the comet means blood and fire, boy, and nothing sweet. So this is, of course, adding to the strong sense in these early chapters of Clash of foreboding, of prophecy, of coming darkness and doom and magic and change. Donna Noble has been saved. Yeah, that's the line, Daniel. Osha is telling us that bad things are coming. And then Bran asks Septon Chael. We don't learn very much about Septon Chael. Wait, was that the wrong episode? No, because wasn't the moon... Moon was Dr. Moon, and Dr. Moon was like the AI who looked after the library, right? Because the library was like a little girl. She was like this little girl who'd been uploaded as the consciousness of the library, and Dr. Moon was the guy. Plaguey has just clocked Altshrift X as secretly being Vati Vidya. It had to happen eventually. Yes, can confirm. Altshrift X is Vati Vidya. I know more about Dark Souls than any YouTuber alive. You ask me a Dark Souls question in the chat, I'll give you the right answer immediately. That's an Altshrift X guarantee. Hit me, actually. This will be a fun game. You ask me a Dark Souls question, I'll tell you the answer. I'm all right. I feel really guilty now because apparently Amarab was talking about a different Doctor Who episode. Schwifty rant withdrawn. Old Nan is the last person who Bran asks. And Bran, Old Nan sniffs the air. She's almost blind. She sniffs the air and she says, I can smell the comet and it be dragons, boy. So dragons, you know, fire, whatever, that's part of the vibe of what, the comet means. But just the image of Old Nan being able to smell the sky, is kind of a glorious one. Kenny Arnold asks, how many times, have I died in Dark Souls? Zero. You know why? Because I'm that good at it. What is the best ring in Dark Souls 1? It's the mysterious ring that you can spawn with at the start, who lets you talk to the NPC, who gives you a special hat, and the skeletons. See? Point one, Schwift. And finally, Bran asks Hodor, what's up? So there's a fair bit to learn about that page. I mean, We get a little bit of vox pop from each of these different characters, all these varying opinions on the comet, which is, in Dark Souls, what weapon does not have a kick attack? Well, obviously the hand, because you can only kick with your foots. See, that was an easy one. It's the punch attack. So we get these vox pops from all these different characters around Winterfell of Bran going like, what do you think about the comet? What do you think about the comet? And we learn all these different ideas about the comet. But we also learn that Bran is a bit lonesome. He's feeling trapped in Winterfell and he's trying to reach out to all these different people. But I get the vibe that none of them are quite what he's looking for. What he wants is his family, his mother, his siblings, his father. But sadly, they are absent. So the direwolves keep on howling, which is putting everyone on edge. The horses are kicking. They're not kissing. Do horses kiss? Probably not. The kennels are barking. The Walders are shivering by their fire because, of course, little Walder Frey and big Walder Frey are here at Winterfell as wards. And they're not super welcome in Bran's mind. And Bran doesn't really mind the howling of the wolves. He likes them. And the wolves, Shaggy Dog and Summer, have been confined to the Godswood, because Shaggy Dog bit little Walder. But They still sound like they're really close. Bran wishes that he could see them. Bran sees the comet hanging above the Winterfell. There's a lot of talk about seeing in this chapter, watching. George hammers this home over and over and over. The idea that Bran longs to see, which of course is, consists of what his psychic power is later on. Someone asks, what's your level in Dark Souls? Trick question. I got you there, Nemo, because there are no levels in Dark Souls, are there? There's just there's souls that are, there's just souls. See? So I got you there. Can't trick me, Nemo. And yes, Kathy, this is where they play Lord of the Crossing, which we're getting to shortly because we are speeding through this episode efficiently. And so Bran reflects on his fall. He does not remember his fall that crippled him, but people say that he had fallen, so he supposes it must be true, which is one of the odder lines in this chapter. Like, isn't it weird? Like, that it's sort of implied that Bran is, like, skeptical of whether he really fell, but he supposes it must be true because people said so. Which is, like, weird. Like, what does he think? That he didn't fall? That he just woke up crippled one day? I think this line might imply a certain, like, disconnection from reality that Bran has. Like, it's like he doesn't even really, like, trust what everyone says is true. Which, I mean, certainly is true of, like, the comet and the wolves and stuff. Like, as Bran becomes more connected to magical perception and the magical world, that naturally conflicts with the material world of common knowledge. So I think maybe that's why Bran seems skeptical of the things around him, which is, you know, it's good in the sense that it gets him closer to the, you know, his magical destiny or whatever, but it does unhinge him from reality in ways that may matter. Right. So Bran, they talk about how the wolves mourned for Bran after he fell, and the wolves know things. But now they've started howling anew, and Bran wonders, who are they mourning now? He wonders if some enemy has slain the king in the north, who used to be Bran's brother, Rob. So remember that distinction in Rob's character between the idea of, the idea of the king in the north, this like political, version of Rob Stark, and Rob as in the human brother, warm, vulnerable Rob, the young Rob, who Bran used to know. Rob the Lord versus Rob, Bran's brother. And so Bran feels like he's lost Rob. Even before Rob dies, Bran feels he's gone. There's a terrible sense of loss in this chapter. And yeah, that's a good idea, that maybe part of the reason why Bran's all weird and questioning and skeptical here is because Bran's memory is legitimately a bit fractured. Nemo suggests that maybe the painkillers Bran got, the drugs, the sweet sleep, might have also fucked with his mind. Yeah, maybe. Preston Jacobs indeed could talk at length, I have no doubt, about the role of drugs and sweet wine and sweet sleep and the whatnot and the opium on psychic function. Because we all know a little bit of this that can do wonders for your psychic perception. And we mentioned that Bran's wolf dreams have him racing up the sides of mountains, jagged, icy mountains taller than any tower, to stand beneath a full moon with all the world below him, which again evokes the idea of Bran seeing the whole world. But I think it's important that, you know, Bran mentions a wolf dream in which he races up the sides of jagged, icy mountains, which is obviously not something that Bran's actually doing through warging, right? Bran isn't actually warging into summer and running up mountains. Summer is confined to the Godswood. So that shows that the wolf dreams aren't always like literal warging dreams. Sometimes wolf dreams are just fictional and imaginative like normal dreams, which I think undermines the idea of like a clear-cut distinction between different dreams and how they work. A lot of like analysts and theorists online will try to like neatly categorize the different kinds of visions and the different kinds of prophecies, and they use that to justify ideas like, oh, maybe the three-eyed crow isn't Blood Raven but is someone else. But I think, you know, passages like this illustrate that it's all wiggly woggly visiony. You can't neatly compile the exact properties and characteristics of different kind of dreams. The point is that it's all messy, and that Blood Raven is the bloody three-eyed crow, guys. Come on, come on, come on. Next page. And Bran tries howling. Bran tries howling with his very own body, his very own lips. He tries to howl. He howls along with his pack, and he feels that it sounds stupid, high and hollow and quavering. A little boy's howl when Bran tries to howl. Prophecy is whack, yo. True. Marwyn said that, didn't he? Welcome, Gemma, to the chat. And so I think this idea of Bran trying to howl and being dissatisfied with his little boy's howl is another example of Bran's dissatisfaction with his body, which I think separates him, unmoors him from physical reality even further. Brandon asks, are there not hills anywhere in the area where the wolves are confined? The wolves are confined to the Godswood, which is like a little, you know, little shrubbery where the weirwoods are. It's not like big. I mean, maybe there's a little hillock in the Godswood or something, but Bran's describing jagged mountains here. And yeah, maybe from the perspective of a wolf, things can be different, but I think it's pretty clear that there aren't jagged mountains in the Godswood. Onion article. Local boy howls like fucking idiot. Indeed. And yeah, Koropu says that, oh, you know, maybe there are two raven or crow associated wizards that have nothing to do with one another, who are both independently messing with Bran, so maybe Bloodraven's different to the three-eyed crow. But like, really, like, is that going to add to the story? Like, does it make sense for George R. R. Martin to trick us like that and to say, oh, there's Bloodraven, but there's also a guy who's kind of like Bloodraven, who's got this whole other thing going on, who has, like, I mean, I don't think so. Anyway, so he's howling, he's having a good howl, he howls at Hayhead, who's one of the random guards, then Maester Luwin comes up, it's like nighttime, and the Bloody Prince is howling, which is, you know, something you gotta deal with, and it looks as though Maester Luwin is taking up, the role of a parent in Bran's life right now, which is not something that Maester Luwin ever signed up for. I don't think they teach parenting at the Citadel. There's no chain link, for parenting, when you get your Maester's chain. But with Eddard gone, and Robb gone, and Catelyn gone, Maester Luwin has to take up the slack. I'm sure Maester Luwin is busy lately with the running of Winterfell alongside, like, Roderick Cassel and stuff in the absence of the Elder Starks. And Luwin comes up, and he's like, yo, Bran, you wanna, like, chill with the fucking howling, mate? Like, we got early mornings tomorrow. Do you wanna just cool your jets a bit? And Bran's like, I'm talking to the wolves, mate. This is important. This is important correspondence. old urine pigeon, Jesus. More like a grandfather, Amarab says. Yeah, well, some kind of mentor, elder role, Luwin is playing, indeed. And Luwin's like, mate, all men must sleep. All men must die, and all men must sleep, even princes, because under the sea there are no hats. Even nobility, even the highest of politicians, are humans with human needs. Even kings shit, and even princes must sleep. And Bran says, when I sleep, I turn into a wolf. Do wolves dream? And Maester Luwin says, I think all creatures dream, but not the same way that men do. And Bran asks, do dead men dream? Do they dream of electric sheep? And Maester Luwin's like, yeah, some people say yeah, some people say no. The dead themselves are silent on the matter. The Maesters seem to have some interesting ideas about ghosts and the dead, don't they? Because there's this weird line by Qyburn where Qyburn says, oh, one time there was like the ghost of a woman after she got up from a chair because I smelled her fart on the cushion or something, and therefore ghosts are real. Like, some kind of real fucking Mulder and Scully shit going on in Qyburn's head. Puzzling ideas from the Maesters sometimes, I think. And they mentioned that, like, Bran has these iron bars bolted into the walls so that Bran can, like, pull himself around the room without having to use his legs, which has got to be one of the upsides of that kind of disability, I would think, is that your arms would get jacked. I mean, the thing about psychics is that traditionally psychics are strong of mind and weak of body, you know, like Professor X, like going around on his wheelchair. I don't think Professor X could do a single pull up because he's in like a psychic wheelchair, isn't he? Whereas Bran, he's going to be able to, like, he could probably walk on his hands. Why doesn't Bran just walk on his hands? Like, if he gets enough upper body strength, I mean, I don't know what you do with your legs. Oh, that would look ridiculous, wouldn't it? Just like these floppy, useless legs just sort of flopping around while you're trying to walk on your hands. That would be so hard to balance. But if he could do it, maybe you'd have to bind your legs and then you could just walk around on your hands all day. And you'd have the freedom to do all the things that Bran always wanted to do. He always wanted to fight and ride and sail and explore. Maybe he could do those things on his hands. Just spitballing. But anyway, so they talk about the dead and stuff. And Bran's like, you know what does dream? Trees. Trees dream. I dream of a tree sometimes. A weirwood tree. It calls to me. So that again is one of the sort of ideas that some people say is like, ooh, there's a distinction between weirwood dreams and crow dreams, because Bran sometimes dreams of the three-eyed crow. And some people are like, oh, but other times he dreams of a weirwood. So the weirwood is really Bloodraven, but the crow is actually some other guy. But it's like, don't... Eh. Eh. Zetsu Band gives us the beautiful image of legs waving in the wind, a body mounted on pillars of muscle, Bran shaped like a triangle. Zetsu, is that a haiku? I think that might be a haiku. How many syllables is it for each line? I think that's a beautiful haiku, Zetsu. Love it. Baran thinks that Bran is a reptilian. Can reptilians walk on their hands? I suppose they do. I mean, reptiles are all hands, aren't they? So I suppose that's how that works. And Mesa Lewin's like, okay, all right, so I got this kid. I'm trying to be a parent figure. I haven't got any, like, parenting chain from the Citadel. And yet I've got this crazy fucking kid talking about wolf dreams and tree dreams and dream dreams. I think this kid needs to get out more. I think this kid needs to spend more time with the other children before he turns into an eccentric little pothead, pot plant, little boy with triangle legs, you know? It's a problem. So he's like, you need to go hang out. And Bran's like, I hate the other children, meaning the Walders, Big Walder and Little Walder, who are here at Winterfell. So Bran is not playing well with others at the moment. And Lewin is like, you got to be nice to the Freys, you know, they're your fosters, it's going to be great, you got to do it. And Bran's like, yeah, well, it's not my fault that Shaggy Dog the direwolf attacked Little Walder. That was Shaggy Dog. Shaggy Dog is so wild that he even frightens Bran sometimes. There are so many little mentions of how, like, intense Rickon and Shaggy Dog are, which has had no payoff in the show and no payoff in the books yet. It'll be very exciting to see something actually happen. Bran Swallow. Nice. Maester Lewin is like Giles from Buffy, but not sexy. Maester Lewin is not sexy? Where is your taste, Kathy? Maester Lewin is a real... He's, you know, like the spots, the balding, the earlobes. He's got a lot going on, Maester Lewin. So the direwolves are dangerous, Maester Lewin says. They are dangerous beasts. Summer ripped out a man's throat in this very chamber. So we can't play with these wacky dogs. We can't have this whole magical destiny thing if it involves quite this much bloodshed. Esophagi belong inside bodies, right? The doggos need to learn. Organs belong inside the body. So teach your dogs that. And they argue about the Walders and direwolves. Bran says that, oh, well, you know, if I got any kind of trouble, Summer would save me, which no doubt he does. And Bran talks about all of his dreams to sail the sea and hunt boar in the Wolfswood and joust with lances. And Lewin's like, man, don't torture yourself with this stuff. You can't do those things because you ain't got no legs, mate. You're also 8 years old. So, like, chill. Get your triangles in line, and then maybe you can do some of those things lately. And Bran's like, I'd rather be a wolf. I want to go rip out the enemy's throats when I go to battle with Rob, and I want to find Arya and Sansa, and I want to do all these adventurous things. Alas, those things never happen. Bran does embrace his wolf magic identity, but he doesn't use it to do these nice things that he always wanted to do. He ends up getting exploited by a creepy old tree man to psychically manipulate innocence. So, yeah, that's a problem. Chris M. points out that Shaggy Dog is now hanging out with the Skargosi, who are cannibals. They eat people. So, yeah, they are not people likely to teach the relevant lessons about viscera remaining inside the body. So, yeah, things will get gnarly. And we remember how Rickon was behaving when the Walders arrived at Winterfell. Rickon's only 4 years old, and Rickon was screaming that he wants his mother and his father and Rob. And of course, he's the one who you need to be sympathetic to, I think. I mean, you know, obviously Bran's having a hard time. Rickon is half his age. Rickon is 4 years old, and he's lost his parents. He's lost his siblings. He's far too young to understand, you know, lords and wars and politics, let alone bloody blood ravens and weirwoods and magic shit. I mean, what must this be like for Rickon, his burgeoning psychic relationship with his direwolf? Like, how is he capable to handle that in a stable way without, man, that... If we got a Rickon POV chapter, that would be pretty intense, I think. But Bran welcomed the Walders some days ago. And with the Walders, Little and Big Walder Frey, they played a game called Lord of the Crossing, which is a little traditional childhood game played in the Twins amongst the Freys. And basically the way it works is that you get a log or even a bunch of rocks or just some sort of crossing over a body of water. And then someone plays the role of the Lord of the Crossing, who stands in the middle of the bridge over the water and says, "I am the Lord of the Crossing. Who goes there? Not by the hair of my chinny chin chin." So I was going for the one about the goats. But the game goes that you have to try and cross the bridge, and you have to get the Lord to let you pass the bridge. And the Lord will make you swear oaths and answer questions and talk and stuff. And you always have to tell the truth. You always have to be honest with your oaths to the Lord, unless you say the word mayhaps. So you can tell the Lord of the Crossing, "Yo, I'm your buddy, I'm your man, I'm gonna bring you some presents, I'll give you a back massage, I'll get you like one of those really fancy hampers full of like the little bottled wines and like the dips and things. It's gonna be great, I'll give you all these things, mayhaps it'll even be delicious." And if you say that word mayhaps, then when the Lord lets you cross, you can actually turn around and like just punch him right in the pineal gland. And toss the Lord of the Crossing into the water, and then you become the new Lord of the Crossing. So that's the way the game works, and it actually alludes to the way the Red Wedding went down, because when Robb Stark turns up at Lord Walder Frey's house at the Twins, Walder sneakily slips the word mayhaps into his line about, "Yeah, you're going to be totally safe here, mate. We Freys are not going to butcher your entire family and all of your men. It's going to be great." So Walder was actually using the game of the Lord of the Crossing to allude and to foreshadow the Red Wedding. Add that to the list of like the 100 different times that the Red Wedding is subtly alluded to. And yeah, later on, Walder Frey actually like explicitly says, "Hey, you wanted to pass the Twins and I was the Lord of the Crossing and you didn't even say mayhaps." So Walder Frey actually does explicitly reference this game from this chapter to foreshadow the Red Wedding. And so, yeah, we discuss an incident, during the playing of this game, The Lord of the Crossing, when Rickon, 4-year-old Rickon, was trying to play the game with Little Walder, and Little Walder, hit Rickon with a stick as part of the game, because The Lord of the Crossing carries a big stick. Walk softly and carry a big stick. But as soon as Rickon got hit with a stick, Shaggy Dog leapt in and attacked Little Walder Frey. Didn't rip out his esophagus, so maybe Shaggy Dog is learning. But he did get some blood in the water. He did savage little Walder Frey a little bit, and that's why the direwolves are now confined to the Godswood. But we also get introduced to what sort of people Little Walder and Big Walder are, and they are by most respects pretty gross and despicable, I think. So he, we get, I mean, most of what the Walders seem obsessed with is the Frey line of succession. Leonicolus, Legolas, can I call you Legolas? Legolas 95 asks what this stream is about. This stream is a academic analysis of Chapter 5 of A Clash of Kings, the second book in the Game of Thrones series. We take our analysis seriously here. We're wearing corduroy. We've got elbow patches. We are sipping bourbon, and we are doing some real fine tooth comb analysis of this particular chapter. So anyway, there's a character called Jamos who Little Walder Frey mentions, which I think is funny because it sounds like jam. And if I was friends with a man named Jamos, I would give him the nickname Marmalade, because it would be ironic and funny. See, that's a little bit of Alt Shift X humor. That's what you can expect from Alt Shift X. Welcome, Legolas. Get that tinfoil hat snug, and welcome, Yuki Alex Nakai. Hello back to Japan. All right, so yeah, no tangents. So we get this long description of the Frey line of succession. Tweed. That's what I was reaching for, Kelly. Yeah, tweed. Corduroy, elbow patches, the whole deal. Maybe I'm wrong on the corduroy. That's like the cordy one. Well, tweed, yeah, that's better. Anyway, so there's like the Frey line of succession, and the Walder Freys are really, they're really obsessed with the Frey line of succession. They're, because, of course, this is all about who's in line to be the next Lord of the Crossing, which is, of course, a coveted political position of great power. All the Freys are always wanting to be the Lord, and they're always fighting over it, just like the Lord of the Crossing game. And so they're all obsessing over that. And it's all a bit tiresome from the Stark perspective. But we also have a bunch of important Freys mentioned, like Black Walder and Walder Rivers and Ser Stevron and all of that. And so they sort of argue all over all that crap. Meanwhile, Bran watches the game played wistfully. He does a lot of wistful watching, Bran does. He is the wistful watcher. He's got a lot of wist, and he's full of it. He is full of wist while he watches. That's WWWW. And we are introduced to some other children around Winterfell. One of them is called Tom Two. And the reason why Tom Two is called Tom Two is because his father's name was Fat Tom and he died. So they call his son Tom Two, which, honestly, if you want to summarize like the cold, harsh realities of Westeros into one line, the fact that you call a kid the name of his dead father Two, after he dies in war, is just so depressing and real and pragmatic and simple and brutal and harsh and just brushing off tragedy. And it's just this tiny little mention of just Game of Thrones is made of tiny tragedies all the way down. Kuropu asks, who wistfully watches the wistful watchman? Good question. It's, you could get a tongue twister there, but it's not so much as a tongue twister as a sort of it's bad for the mic. Bran should have been sent to Foster with Doran Martell because they could have learned so much about wistful watching. Indeed, David. Doran Martell is one of the most accomplished wistful watchers in the series, rivaled only by Bloodraven himself. Yeah, it's rough. Maybe he's a clone, Kuropu says. I don't know the context, but I'd say that's a definite possibility at all, in all Game of Thrones moments. All right, Ben Keeler asks for a long, dense akuk. Long, dense akuk inbound. So they play the game, The Lord of the Crossing, and everyone laughs so much. They're having a good time. This is actually a nice moment of joy in Winterfell. There's all these kids playing this game together, which is actually really nice. And I think that's actually nice. But because we're seeing this from the perspective of the wistful watcher Bran, this sweet moment, we see it from a negative perspective. Sophie Ksonecki asks about the podcast feed. So you mentioned that it opens like a code page when you click on it on desktop. That is what's meant to happen. Because what you do is you take that link, just like the URL of the podcast feed, and you paste that or you plug that into whatever your podcast catcher feed is, and then it'll make it work. But yeah, no, what we shall, I can actually turn on a thingy so that, it turns that code page into something that, looks a lot friendlier. Yeah, I should change that. Thanks. But yeah, rest assured, I'm pretty sure the podcast feed does work. But correct me if that's not the case. Indeed. Yeah. David points out that we are the wistful watchers, wistfully watching and waiting for winds of winter. So that's depressing and true that no one is more wistfully watching, even more than Bran, even more than Doran, even more than Bloodraven. There are we, the wistful watchers on the wall, waiting for the winds of winter. Nikolai, is it pronounced Nikolai? It looks like it says Nikolai. It's Nikolai, isn't it? Nikolai Kankov asks if Alt Shift X will do any Wheel of Time videos. Look, I wouldn't know what that Alt Shift X guy is up to, but I would guess that there is talk of a Wheel of Time TV adaptation. There has been talk before, but maybe in the event that a TV adaptation does happen of a Wheel of Time, then maybe Alt Shift X would do content about it. That could be fun. But yeah, I am wary that a Wheel of Time is like heavier than I am. Like, there's so many thick tomes in that series. It would be quite a task to get on top of that. So we'll see what happens. If we're mad enough to try and make sense of Game of Thrones, maybe we are mad enough to do the Wheel of Time. Time is a circle, they say. Time is a penny farthing wheel rolling down the donut hill of Sisyphus under the suspiciously circular moon. Socrates said that. Welcome, Hairless Oyster. No, an oyster is never late, but arrives precisely when he intends to. Okay, so Rickon comes to like the Walders, even though Rickon's dog almost bloody killed one of the Walders. Rickon actually makes friends with the Walders, and they play games together, and they even explore the Winterfell crypts together, and Bran gets very angry at Rickon for taking Walder Frey into the sacred Stark space, which is maybe fair enough to some extent, but I think it's also truly comes from a place of jealousy, where Bran is mad that Rickon gets to go and have fun and run around and make friends with these Freys when Bran is unable to do those things. So Bran's feeling very isolated and frustrated at the moment, I think. Maester Luwin turns up and does what a maester usually does when they come across a problem, which is that they try to give it drugs. They try to give it opium. So Luwin says, all right, Bran's being a bit of a difficult child, so here's what I'll do. I'll give him some sweet sleep. And so they drug Bran and he falls asleep. I think that's a comment from George R. R. Martin on the state of pharmaceutical use in modern day America. I think opiate dependency is a serious problem in the United States and elsewhere, and I think that antibiotic resistance is actually what the White Walkers are about. It's a looming problem that we all know is coming, and yet we do not sufficiently act on. So I think George Martin is warning us here. It's all a big metaphor, not to misuse antibiotics and not to overprescribe opiates, because that shit's addictive, mate. Too much Benadryl in one little Bran, and he's gonna pop his clogs and lose his nod. So that's what my aunt used to say. So hashtag social commentary. George Martin is hashtag woke. So Bran gets drugged, but at the same time that Maester Luwin comes and offers sweet sleep, Osha is also there, and she says, yo, I think your wolf dreams are legit as fuck, mate. Magic's real. You better believe it. Your Hogwarts invitation's coming in the mail, mate. So mixed messages from these two mentors for Bran. One is saying magic, one is saying shut up and take your pills. Red pill, blue pill, three fish, four fish, Adderall, Ritalin, swallow it, take it in. That's one of Dr. Seuss's more little known rhymes. So we have this dichotomy again between the dream of walking being better than the truth of his bedchamber, because Bran, despite the sweet sleep, has a dream of walking in the Godswood, walking as a wolf. This is probably a warging wolf dream. And so it's another dichotomy, like just like it's Osha and magic versus Maester Luwin and material reality. We have the dream and we have reality, and all this the real world magic is like the ideological battle. It's actually just like in the prologue of this book when Maester Cressen represents material scientific common knowledge, whereas Melisandre represents magical, prophetic, fiery, dangerous side of things. So that ideological battle between magic and the material world continues through to this chapter. Bran, as summer, walks through the Godswood, and he smells with his wolf smell all of the things in the Godswood, the perfume of rich rotting earth. And on the final page, Bran smells his brother, Shaggy Dog, and Shaggy Dog is trying to find a way out of the Godswood because they're like walled in there, they're contained. And Shaggy Dog is searching and searching and never finding. So I think, like Bran, Rickon is feeling very frustrated. He's trying to find a way out of the trap that he's in. He's clearly finding some satisfaction hanging out with the Walders, but he's not satisfied. He misses his family. He wants something more, but he can't get it yet. We have an interesting distinction between the description of dead man rock is how Summer's Eyes describes the walls around the Godswood as compared to the living wood of the trees. So there's a distinction between the living natural world and the dead man-made world, which I think is interesting, which again evokes the sort of magical versus material worlds. Shaggy Dog is experiencing rage when he's trapped and hemmed in the Godswood. And Bran knows that outside the man cliffs, outside the walls, outside Winterfell, the true world is calling, and he knows he must answer or die. How's that for a chapter, eh? How's that, mate? That's a goodbye chapter, isn't it? There's some words in there, and they were about doggy wolves, and we had a bit of psychological turmoil and a little bit of an ideological battle. And I think you'll find that's some of the ongoing schemas that's present in the text of A Clash of Kings. I think you'll find that in actual fact, George R. R. Martin has a certain taste, certain tendency to explore those particular themes. And those themes continue to be explored throughout the series. And if you look real close, you might see them recur. Because this is not just a Song of Ice and Fire, mate. This is a song versus the man-made world and the magical world. This is a song about comfortable bedchambers and stone windows. This is a chapter about all manner of things in the human mind. It's bicameral, yo. And I think we'll explore more of these in episodes to come. Mate. all right, we're going to wrap it up now. Does anyone have any quick cues to be aid? That was episode 5 of A Clash of Kings Abridged. I hope you enjoyed. It was a long way. Oh, no food description, Hadass points out. Was there a food description in this chapter? Well, all right. There was the perfume of the rich scent of... Now, here we are. There is a food description. Don't worry. Because over here, we have Summer smell the scent of squirrel, which made him remember the taste of hot blood. The taste of hot blood slaver filled his mouth. He had eaten no more than half a day past. The squirrels are chittering and rustling above him. So there is a bit of an allusion to food in this chapter. So George Martin did not go hungry in the writing of this. Boy Next Door asks, what do you think about the theory that Lil Pump is the fire god? Yeah, I can see that, but what if Lil Pump is actually the Great Other, a champion of the Great Other, when the true fire god is Lil B? R'hllor is based. Did you make highlights when you read? Morlan asks. I'm not even using a book, actually. This is all off the dome, as Lil Pump might say. I've actually memorized the entire series, and I'm just riffing it, man. Well, no, all right, sorry, that's a lie. The truth is that we have a room full of script writers behind every Alt-Shift-X episode. I'm reading off one of those teleprompters that you see on, like, the weather report. And I'm just reading what comes up on the paper. We pay a lot of money to a lot of very professional, talented individuals to write these insights to share them with you all. We have a stream donation. Thank you very much to Kathy Garza for your donation. Is there a message there? I don't think so. I've got to remember to check the messages. Sometimes I miss donation messages, so sorry for that. T. Bunneting asks, when's the next one? It was a long break in between episodes, wasn't it? It's been like a month since the last one. So we will not let it go that long next time. We can't commit to a schedule, I don't think, but be ready at any time for a lightning strike of Citrus. Hadass asks about Juan. Long-time listeners might remember Juan. Is Juan on the Altshrift X team? Juan is not on the Altshrift X team. Juan is in the Altshrift X family. Juan is dear to my heart. He's like a son to me. Wages would not be enough to thank him for the service he gives to this channel. Kenny Arnold asks, would you be upset if the Night King kills everyone in Season 8 and claims the Iron Throne? I'll tell you what, that'd keep me on my toes, because I think the problem with Game of Thrones Season 8 is that it's going to feel a bit too obvious, whatever happens. It might feel a bit by the numbers, a bit rote, a bit predictable. So if the Night King won, I would at least be surprised, and that's there's something to be said for that. Legolas95 asks if Swift is how to basic. Don't blow my cover. We all know that Vsauce is how to basic. Will Swift read The Hobbit? Yeah, I'm as fond of The Hobbit as the next man. There might be a place for some kind of Swifty shifty sort of hobbity sort of a Jim Jam at some point. Juan is Little Pump. It's possible. Ben Keeler asks if the Night King can sit on the Iron Throne. It's Valyrian steel in it. Let me just straighten my pocket protector. Well, actually, a common misconception that the Iron Throne is constructed of Valyrian steel, when Valyrian steel is in fact far too rare to be used in the construction of the Iron Throne. There are only in the world of Ice and Fire some 200 Valyrian steel blades, and so it's frankly absurd that you could construct an entire Iron Throne out of such blades. The blades of the Iron Throne came from the swords of the defeated fallen against the War of Aegon the Conqueror in 0 AC, so I think you'll find that the Iron Throne is in fact iron, not Valyrian steel. Yeah, that voice, look, I jumped, I leapt before I looked, and that voice didn't quite stick. I was going for who's the nerd in The Simpsons, who's when you hit the xylophone in Itchy and Scratchy episode 95, I think you'll find that there's a D flat over there when that's an F sharp, so what's that about? But I'm not actually good at voices, which is kind of a tragedy. Hagrid asks how old I am. I won't tell you how old I am, but I will tell you how old my niece is. And she is older than you. So there you go. All right, so we're going to end it there. Thank you all for participating. Have a lovely week. Eat your vegetables. So next time we'll make sure that we don't stream unlisted, because I think a notification didn't go out because I pressed the wrong setting. I actually think it might be worth if you'll follow AltShiftX on Twitter, because I don't really trust YouTube to put out notifications. YouTube famously fails to put out notifications. So it might be worth following on Twitter, just because that's a place that I can actually control. And if you even turn on notifications on Twitter, that way you'll actually be notified whenever we start streaming on AltShiftX. I think that might be a good idea, so probably go follow on Twitter. Cheers, have a good one, see you next time, bye.